Today's daf in Masechet Kiddushin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Tet Zion, and we're holding on the fifth line down, and we're now got up to the next piece in the Mishnah, which says that you can actually be kena an eved ivri with a shtar. How do we know that you could be kena with a shtar? Omar Kro, Amarula, look. The Pasuk talks about the relationship of Yi'ud, of an Oma Ivriya, and what happens if the master, who now was Miya'ed the Oma Ivriya, wants to take another wife, right? So that's where we learn out the din, She'irak sutava onata lo igra. This is also another amazing point, Rabbi Isai, that the ikar dinim of the responsibility of marriage is learned from Oma Ivriya. That's not unbelievable? Oh, come on. You see how totally the sugyas are interrelated. Amazing. Okay, but anyway, so since the Torah says ima cheret ikachlo, so then that means that the Torah is comparing the original wife, that is to say the Oma Ivriya, to the other wife that he might want to take, right? Well, how does he take the other wife? Well, he could take the other wife with a shtar, right? So just like the Acheret is Mekanya b'shtar, we know that there is, as we learned out before, for Kiddushin, there is a din in shtar. So then that would mean that the Kinyan of an Oma Ivriya can also be b'shtar. And once we know that that is true of the Oma, so now we know that it's true to an Eved, because we said, Akiyim acher lecha achicha ha-ivri o ha-ivriya. So now we understand that Ivri and Ivriya are compared. So then if that's the case, then that would be true of the Eved as well. So hani chalaman di omar shtar oma ivriya adon kotvo. Now hold on a second over here. You're saying that you could be kone an Eved, or an Oma in this case, through a shtar. What does the shtar say? Does the shtar say the same thing that a shtar kiddushin says? Namely, with this shtar, a man writes to a father, I am kona your daughter as an oma? Or does the shtar say, with this shtar, the father writes, I am makta you, my daughter, for an oma? Now, those are two totally different shtarot. The latter would be a shtar that's similar to the sale of karka, where the seller writes the shtar. The former would be similar. Stop yawning. This is serious stuff, Ari. Whoa. Okay. So that would be similar to the shtar of kiddushin, where over there the buyer, so to speak, the baal, writes. Now, if we're comparing the ima cheret ikachlo, so then it's only comparable if the shtarot are comparable. If you're not using a shtar similar to a shtar kiddushin, so then there's no real connection between the ima cheret and this one, right? So ani chalamad yom shtar of an oma ivriya is written by the adon. That's equivalent to kiddushin, where it's written by the baal. The baal and the adon, that's what we're referring to. Ela luman di omar av kotvo. If it's going according to the Mandi Omar, who says that the father in this case, and the father is now the mocher, and it's like he would own a piece of karka, and he sells the karka, sadai kenuyalacha, he's selling his daughter, biti kenuyalacha, as an oma, right? So then, ma'ikala meimar. So what that has nothing to do with the shtar that we're talking about over here of the kiddushin. So how would we know that b'shtar? So di'itmar, here's what I'm referring to. Shtar oma ivriya, mikotva. Who writes that shtar? Ravuna says the Odin, who is buying her, writes it, just like in Kedushin. But Rav Chista says, no, the father writes it just like the seller of a field. So Anichel Ravuna, I can understand, I'll leave it to Ravuna. It makes sense, because then there's a similarity between the shtar of the Oma Ivriya and the shtar of Kedushin, and we can learn it out from Ima Cheret Yikachlo. But according to Rav Chista, Ma'ikala Meima, where would we know this from? Omer of Acher bar Yaakov. Okay, I'll tell you where we would know it from, according to Rav Chista. Omer kro lo teitse kitseit avadim. So what do we learn from that pasuk? An Oma Ivriya does not go out the way an Eved goes out. Meaning, how would an Eved go out? An Eved Knani would go out if, let's say, the Odai knocks out his tooth or blinds his eye, right? Or anyone of the Chavdala Devorim. So what if an Odin does that and he knocks out a tooth of his poor Amma Ivriya? Does she go out free? No. Lo tetze ketzeta avadim. But note how much it's stressing over here. She does not go out the way avadim go out. But that implies, but she comes in the way avadim come in. That she would be niknate kikinyan ha'avadim. So our avadim actually purchased. We're going to see later on that shtar works to buy an evet kanani because they're the same as vitnachaltem otam livnechem. They're the same as karka. So therefore, the pasuk is saying she doesn't go out with Rosh Evarim, but she does come in with knisata avadim. And what is that? That's referring to shtar. Now, how do you know that it's referring to shtar? Maybe it's referring to chazaka, because we're going to see later on that if you work with an eved, that's a chazaka on the eved in the same way that it's a chazaka on a piece of karka to work the karka, or to put up a gate, or whatever. So if you use the eved for that, you would be kona. So maybe that's the point over here. If you have the Amma Ivriya pick up the garbage for you, so then you're kona with chazaka. But how do you know it means shtar? No, tell you why. Because when the Pasuk was referring to Eved Kanani, what does it say over there? An Eved Kanani, itnachaltem otam livnechem acharechem, loreshet achuza. So then it says, otam. You can treat your Eved Kanani like an achuza, meaning like a field. And therefore, you could be kena and evet kenani the way you would be kena a field, which is b'chazaka. Otam b'chazaka. But you cannot take an evet ivri or an oma ivri b'chazaka. So then what would be the only available implication of the pasuk that says, lo tetze kitze tavadim aval nichneset kinyan avadim? The only thing that's left is b'shtar. But I don't understand. It says, lo tetze kitze to avadim. And the other way around, we could say, we could say actually the exact opposite, couldn't we? Why don't we say that otam, meaning the eved kenani, vitnachaltem otam livnechem acharechem, treat them like a field. Can you be going to a field with a shtar? Yes. But you can only do that with an Eved Kanani. But you cannot do it through an Eved, for an Eved Ivri. And that would mean that the only thing that was left would be Chazaka, not Shtar. I don't know where you came up with the idea that specifically the Torah is being Mamayet the Shtar. Well, wait a minute. It says it's Mamayet the Shtar. Lo tetzei ketzei tavadim. But you can be Kena the way they are. I understand. But you're the one who picks it out of a hat, for God's sakes. You decide. You got two psukim. One of them says, do not treat an Eved Ivri the way you treat Vitnachaltem a field. Only Otam, only an Eved Kanani can be treated in that way. The other Pasuk says, but you could be Kena an Oma Ivriya the way you're Kena an Eved. You decided, for no obvious reason, that the part that says you cannot treat them like an Eved, that is a reference to Chazaka. But you can be Kena them means that's referring to a shtar. And I'm suggesting maybe it's exactly the opposite. Don't treat the Eved Ivri the way you treat a Soda. That's referring to a shtar. But you can be Machnis the Oma Ivri the way you would be Machnis an Eved. That's referring to Chazaka. I don't understand, like, how do you know which one is yes or which one is no? Oh, I see what you're asking, says the Gemara. That's just a Svara. Mistavra, that a shtar is more reasonable as a way to be kena Amma Ivriya. You know why? Because a shtar is very powerful in the fact that it can actually end a marriage, namely gittin, right? And there's no way that a chazaka, a woman isn't kena herself a chazaka. No, I can say just the opposite. I can say, look, a chazaka is very powerful because if a ger dies without any heirs, so then anybody can be kena the nichse hager, who has no owner, now it could be kena with a chazaka. you obviously can't be connected up with a shtar because there's no one to write the shtar, right? So the chazaka, therefore, is more powerful. Yeah, okay, come on. But what we're talking about over here is the dinim of ishus, right? And in terms of ishus, it makes much more sense that this entire comparison is talking about the thing that would be kaina, would be a shtar, and not chazaka. Or, you know what I could say? I could say another thing. Remember, we started off with the drosha of ima acheret ikachla, that the Torah is comparing her to the acheret. Remember? And then you said, well, okay, but that doesn't work out according to Rav Chisda because it's the wrong type of shtar. That's true, okay? I can't use the pasuk ima acheret to tell me that you could be kona with a shtar, because it's a totally different shtar. I appreciate that. But let me ask you something. Once we came up with the clear-cut indication between these two psukim, namely, lo tetzei ketzei tavadim, but nichneset, kinichnas avadim. And on the other hand, vitnachaltem otam livnechem. Okay? We don't know which one is which. I'm telling you that you're right. We don't know which one is which, but the pasuk we can use, even though it's not as a mocker for shtar, because it's not like the shtar kedushin, but we can use the pasuk as an indication of which one should be which. Don't you think? If the pasuk said, im acheret yikachla, and it's comparing her, the Elma Ivria, to the acheret, and we know the acheret you can't use chazaka for. There's no din of chazaka for kiddushin, and there is a din of the ishtar for kiddushin. Put it all together, and you've got a beautiful thing. You've got three psukim that need all to be balanced out. Vitnachaltem otam, on the one hand, lo teitzei, but nichnas, on the other hand, and then imacheret, to tell me that it has to be the type of kinyan that works for a woman. Well, what type of kinyan works for a woman? A shtar. Okay. So putting it all together, even Alibeder of Chista, who holds that it's not the same type of shtar, and therefore can't serve as the ikar limut for shtar, but you see how beautifully it all adds up when you put it together. Lovely. I'm afraid that I'm losing you guys because I'm not getting any dancing. I'm not getting any smiles. The big N is looking over here like he's got all of these issues on his head, except for the three psukim. I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, I could transfer some Talisker if that would help, at least right before the Daf Yomi. That should certainly help people's moods. Ah, well, we've got David is very happy at least. Okay. We've got one person dancing. We've got Gavi dancing, I hope, while he's walking. All righty. And, of course, we've got Barnea, who does his weird Indian water dance every morning. So I'm assuming that's because of his joy in the daf. There we go. Okay. All right. It's very beautiful, I thought. Now, getting back to all of this, we said, according to Rav Chisda, we've got all these three psukim, and they add up, right? But what about according to Rav Huna? Remember, Rav Huna didn't need any of this stuff. He learned it directly from Imacheret Ikachlo, because according to Rav Huna, the shtar of the Amma Ivria is exactly like a shtar Kiddushin. The person who's buying the Amma Ivria writes, I am with this taking your daughter as an Amma. That's exactly the same Lashon, I am with this marrying your daughter, right? So that would be the shtar. But what does he need these psukim for? We just did all of this beautiful stuff, lo tetzei, ketzei tavadim. Well, what does he learn from lo tetzei, ketzei tavadim, but nichneset? No, he says, wait a minute. Lo tetzei, ketzei tavadim is coming to teach you the direct halacha, okay? It's coming to tell me that eina yotzah b'roshei avarim ke'evet. She cannot go out to freedom because the odin has caused her to lose her tooth and so on, right? So that's what it's needed for. Hey, you know what? That's true. Rav Chisda needs it for that also, doesn't he? So how does he say that we have a right to be Dorish? Yes, lo tetzei, but nichmas. I mean, it's coming to tell me exactly what it's coming to tell me. She cannot go out, b'roshei avarim, period. What's the problem? Rav Chisda. Says Rav Chisda, that's true. But there's still an extra drasha. Because all it needed to say was lichtofro lo tetzei ka'avadim. When you're stressing kitzeit avadim, you're implying not kitzeit avadim, but yes, kenisat avadim, correct? So that's a separate drasha. I learn out both of them. My kitzeit avadim, shma minotarte, botinim, roshei evarim, that she's not yotzeit by roshei evarim, and the din of the fact that she's nichlaset b'shtar. Next thing in the Mishnah. Okay, an Eved Ivri is Kona Atzmo B'Shanim. Okay, how do we know it's Kona B'Shanim? Well, it says Beferish. Shei Shanim Yavod, Ubashvit Itze, and so on. So that's about as clear as you can get. The beginning of Mishpatim is all about that. 6 years. Okay, how do we know it's Yotze B'Yovel? Well, that's because in Vayikra, it says Ad Shnat Yovel Yavodimach. And we know that he can buy himself out, Begira on Kesev. How do we know that? We know that from the Omar Ivriya, because it says, Omar Chizkiah d'Amakra vehevda. Vehevda means that the Adon has to participate in the Yitzia if she wants to buy herself out. How does he do that? Prorating. So vehevda is chayev prorating. The word for prorating in Lashon HaKodesh is gira on kesev, the deduction of the value of the work that's already taken place. Malamit shemigareya pidyona v'yotza, and this is irrespective of what the current value is. We look at the purchase of the work up front, and then we prorate it. Tana. There's a braita that puts it like this, that an Eved Ivri is konet atzmo bekesev, beshove kesev, or with a shtar. Huh. We're going to talk about that. So I understand kesev. So bishlama kesev, it says, mi kesef miknato. So it says, im od rabot pashanim lefim yashiv geulato, mi kesef miknato. And we learned that from the cases of the, remember, in the end, it turned out we never found anybody that doesn't hold of the drush of Sachir Sachir, right? We were doicha all attempts to find someone. And indeed, the Rishonim speak out that because of that, we rely on Sachir Sachir across the board because we never identified anybody who doesn't hold of Sachir Sachir. Okay, so therefore, we know that if it says that in one of the kinyanim of an Eved Ivri, even by a goy, it's true in all. So if that's the case, it says, Mikesev Miknato, Yashiv Geulato, and that pasuk itself tells me, Kesev Miknato is money, cash, Shava Kesev is the addition of Yashiv, and remember we learned, Yashiv comes to tell me whatever form that value takes, whether it's in terms of coinage or whether it's in terms of rags, I don't care what it is, Shove Kesev is Kekesev. But Shtar, what do you mean Shtar? He's calling himself with a Shtar. I mean, what, he writes out a check? He can force the guy to accept the check? Obviously, he can't force a guy to accept the check. So an IOU? I mean, what if the guy doesn't want to accept an IOU? Okay, but what if the guy is ready to accept an IOU? So maybe that's what it means. He can buy himself back with an IOU. Ah, come on, that's ridiculous. I mean, then that's the same thing as money. I mean, the guy's accepting it in lieu of cash. That's not a separate din to be kona yourself with a check or with an IOU. It's just a way of paying the money. So didn't we say, Yashiv, that would be the shtar over here would be shtar adame, an IOU. That would be kesev, anu kesev. Ela, it must mean, whoa, this is a whole new idea. It must mean that the odin will write a shtar to him and say, you are hereby freed, right? Well, that makes no sense either. Lema lebe apetre zeal. What does he have to write a shtar for? A shtar doesn't serve any purpose. He just says in front of two witnesses, out you go. I don't want to work with you anymore. That's enough, isn't it? Well, I mean, if he says it in front of Bezdin, then Bezdin knows. Inami beapi bedina. Zeal, out you go. What does he have to write a shtar for? A shtar is for something that you own, like a field. But, I mean, if it's something that you just have a lien on, I mean, here you've got a lien on his work, that's all. You're being meichel the work that he owes you, then mechila helps. Omar Rava, well, you know what this braita is saying. Hold on to your seats, boys, because it's saying something incredible. It is saying, Zot Omeret Eved Ivri Gufo Kanui. It's saying that you must own an actual kinyan in his body. And therefore, if you would say, I'm meichel, go, it's fine, it wouldn't help. Because you can't just be meichel a field. And therefore, you can't be Reb Yaakov, mute, sweetie. But you can't just be Michael Afield, so you can't just be Michael an Evan Ivry. You would have to actually write out a shtar. That's incredible. So that there's a concept of a get shichrur on an Evan Ivry? I mean, in what sense do you own the Evan Ivry? I don't understand. If the Evan Ivry does something, picks up something, and so on. I mean, he's got his own yad. He's not considered to be an extension of the yad of the Baalim. We never heard of such a thing. It seems outrageous. There's a brilliant Ramban. Mamish sounds like a brisker sfora. And indeed, Reb Chaim Alashas discusses the same concept. I don't know, you know, if you saw the Ramban. But the Ramban says, look, when we're talking about the kinyan of an Eved, Kanani, so that kinyan of the Jew, of the Eved Kanani, is something which gives him an actual Kedushas Yisrael, right? And now enables the Dinim to be Nogea. Let's say he owns the Shifcha. So he now is able to actually give over that Shifcha Kananit to an Eved as a wife and so on. That's a kinyan of the goof. And that's for sure that it affects also Isurim, because it gives him mitzvahs like Yisrael. It creates a status of Yisrael when he writes out the Get Shichror. Therefore, says the Ramban, if an Odin of an Eved Ivri is able to give him a wife and to be matu, the din of a Shivcha Knanis, then there's obviously Kinyonim other than the lien that he has on his work. Otherwise, how would the halacha change just because he has a lien on the guy's work for 6 years? It's ridiculous. The guy sells you his work for 6 years, so now he's allowed to start sleeping with a shivcha? That's nuts. So obviously, there's some other element over here in which the Torah is giving you over an actual kinyan on him that changes his dinim. Wow, perfect for it, right? So to take off that part, that you would need a shtar for. You can't just be Michael the work. That's what it's talking about, to be able to actually free him from this special halacha that the Torah now provides as a new din. There we go. The next piece in the Mishnah goes like this. Yitira alav ama ivriya. There's one other thing, and that is that the ama is kena herself with simanim. So puberty now frees her. Says Reish Lakish, well, I got news for you. There's another brilliant way that an ama ivri has kena atzma. If her father dies, take this. She has already been sold, right? Her father dies. If her father dies, then she is automatically no longer an Amma, because the father basically was only selling the rishus that he has. Once he dies, so then there's no longer any rishus that he has, and she would be Yotze from the Adon. No, but Pashtus doesn't make any sense because he already sold that right. Now, he's no longer the one in charge. It's very interesting. This has various contemporary issues, which Reb Moshe actually addresses in a tshuva and points out that a father continues to be zoche in the mitzia or in the enek and so on and so forth, or knas, of a child that had been sold for an amma. So he hasn't given away his rights. So what this means is that all that's happened is that the purchaser has a right to the kinyan of the work of his daughter, but he's buying that off of the father who has the right to that work. Once the father's no longer alive, so then he couldn't have sold him something that he doesn't have, and therefore he no longer would have it. Tainas Reish Lakish, so that would mean if the father who sold her dies, then she is automatically Yotza from the Rishus of her Adon. Quite astounding. So, Ama Ivra Konat Atzma B'mitat Av, Mishut Adon, and it's a Kal V'chomer. if simonim don't have any impact on the father's kinyan of her, right? The father retains his rights to her even at puberty. He only loses the rights after she becomes a bogeret. But puberty, which turns her into a nara, does not provide her rights. And nonetheless, those same simonim that will not take her out of the rishus of the father will take her out of the rishus of her master, then the death of the father, which definitely does remove any rights of the father, well, you'll say, well, obviously he's dead. No, not obviously, not at all. Because if he retained rights, then those rights would have been given to his children, right, to his heirs. But they're not. We're going to see, we learn out halacha later on, that the moment that the father dies, there is nothing for the banim to be yorish. So that means that she was yotzei mirshus ha'av. So the mitah shemotzin mirshut ha'av, enodin shemotziam mirshut adon, meisve revoshaya. So Rav Hoshaya says, Resh Lakish, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, it's a beferish Mishnah, right? The Mishnah says, there's one thing that an Amma Ivriya has over an Eved Ivri. Namely, she's konet atzma b'simanim, and he doesn't. So now, im ita, if you're going to tell me there's this whole new idea that Resh Lakish has come up with, how come the Mishnah doesn't know anything about it? Ha Resh Lakish, what do you say about that? Im ita, if you are right that there is this new idea, why doesn't it say that she's yotzei b'mita ta'av, which is not the case if we're talking about a actual eved and not an amma? Well, it says Rish Lakish, well, you think the Mishnah is telling me every single case? Tana v'shir. There were some things that she's got over the eved and some other things that we didn't bother mentioning, like my case. Oh, come on, Rish Lakish, you don't leave out one case. I mean, you're telling me the Tana didn't say all the cases. Show me another case, okay? Then I'm persuaded. But if I don't see any other case except your case, how do you explain the fact that the Mishnah would leave out just, coincidentally, one case, the case of Rish Lakish? That's ridiculous. So my shir, the high shir, where's another case? Oh, very poshut. Shir mitatayad adon. Look, do we not all agree that an Amma Ivriya is not passed on to any of the Yorshim, not even his sons? An Eved Ivriya is passed on to a son, just not to others, right? But an Amma Ivriya is not passed on to any of the sons of, or any heirs of the owner. So what does that mean? It means that the death of the owner essentially frees her completely, correct? Okay, how come the Mishnah didn't say that? Mishnah should have said that. So shir mitata adon. Well, no, I mean, I'm sorry. The whole point of the Mishnah is saying that there's more yitziot by the Amma Ivriya. But in this case, the death of the adon is not more because there's also a male Eved Ivri that would have that. Why? It's not true. He does go and work for the son. Yes, but what if he's a ritziyah? In the case of someone who went through Ritziyah, then the din is that he's Yotze with the death of the Odai. And Nirtza doesn't work even for a Ben. Koshik, and not for any of the other heirs, right? So since that is true even of a male, I can't use it as a one-up that she's got over a male. It's not true. Lav shiron tekivanika nami b'ish lo katani. Okay, so then how do you explain the fact that Resh Lakish, you're the only case that the Mishnah left out? That's nuts. Oh, I'll tell you, there's an answer. I give up on the Tana v'shir, but I'm saying, you know why the Mishnah didn't want to say it? It's because the Tana davar sheyesh lo kitzba katani. Davar she'ein lo kitzba lo katani. Guys, I said, okay, if I just run ahead a few extra minutes because we fell so far behind and just catch up on this, have your rishus? Okay, thanks. So the Tana would only be talking about things that are defined. The death of a father, I mean, when is that defined? It doesn't have any definition in terms of time. So therefore, look, I understand. If you're talking about things that, yes, at the end of 6 years, I know when that's coming. When Yovel comes, I know when that's coming. The amount of money that you would have to pay for Giron Kesef, I know precisely what that is. And when you want to use it, I can tell you exactly what it is. But you ask me, at what point will she go out with the death of her father? How should I know? So therefore, I'm not going to bother writing anything like that. Well, hold on a minute. And do you know when puberty occurs? So why are you writing in the idea of simonim? That is very variable. And nonetheless, it says it in the Mishnah. So, you don't know when death occurs either. Very variable. But it should list it. No? Nah, come on. It's a big difference. Amrav Safra, look, we don't know a shiur for puberty in terms of how late puberty could show. But we do know that there is a limit, lamata, because there is no din of puberty that would apply to a youngster, because even if we see pubic hairs, they do not imply puberty. They are required in terms of years specifically. And therefore, what is considered to be simonim is defined. Because look, as it says in the Braita, let's say you have a nine-year-old. Now, this would be a nine-year-old. Okay, this is a question in Nida, whether we're talking about a boy or a girl. Because nine, up until now, we know defines the genitals of a boy. Okay, but lamaisis could refer to a girl as well. So if a nine-year-old presents signs of puberty, that's not signs of puberty. Don't you know that human skin grows hairs because of other things than puberty? What about moles? Why does a mole grow hair? So I don't know. You could have whatever it is that stimulates growth of hair with a mole. You may not see a mole, but this hair that's growing is the equivalent of there being a mole structure, maybe under the skin, I don't know, that caused a hairy growth. Nothing to do with puberty. It happens to be located in the genital area, but a nine-year-old does not get to puberty. Now, how about if those hairs remain there from the time that he's 9 years old and through the time that he's 12 years old and one day? If meaning that he's already in his 13th year, they're still there, it doesn't matter. It's still a mole. Whereas Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, no, at that point, if it lasts, if it fell out before his 12th year, he's 11 years old, then it's a mole. But if it lasts through the 13th year, into the 13th year, according to Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, it's a simon. Everybody agrees that if the actual appearance of hair is ben yud gimel shanim v'yom echad, and then it falls out, that was puberty. Even though it falls out, it fell out, it isn't really puberty, why would it fall? No, not true. There everybody agrees that if it's ben yud gimel shanim v'yom echad, divrei hakol, that is a proper simen. So memela, we can taina that there's no reason why we should be doicha Resh Lakish. Maybe the only things that are said in the Mishnah are things that have some level of identifiable limits. Masha Enkein, the death of her father is totally outside of any range of predictability. All right, says Rav Sheshet, I got another problem with Resh Lakish. Okay, let's take a look at the Braita. The Braita says like this, that Rabbi Shimon Omer, there are four cases where we are give an enek, where we give anaka, hanaka. Now, we're going to see that there's a machlokas about whether a boreach, that is an eved that runs away from his avdos, whether there's a halacha in such a case that he would be nonetheless mu'unak when we recapture him and he works. Or we're going to see that there's a question about if you went ahead and you buy yourself out. So if you buy yourself out, then you forced, so to speak, the master to relinquish you. Does he have to give you a tip? That we're going to see later on. So Rabbi Shimon, at the end of that braita, says, let me tell you what I think the halacha is. There are four total cases where there is a din of hanaka, but there is no sex that will have four cases. No matter what your sex is, there used to be only two, by the way. So no matter what your sex is, there's only three possible cases. Three of them are for males, and three of them are for females. There is never a case of four in any one sex. Why? Because one of the ways is simonim, and males don't go out with simonim. And one of them has to do with ritzia, at the end of the ritzia. and Ritzia does not apply to a woman, and therefore the death of the Adin in the Ritzia is not going to affect her. And that means there's a total of 3 per sex and 4 total, right? Now, excuse me, Reish Lakish, who cares whether there's Ritzia according to you? Anyway, a female goes free with the death of the Adin. And in a sense, if she goes out with the death of the Misa of the father, fine. So there's no Ritzia with the death, but she goes out with the Misa Sa'av, doesn't she? So how come it doesn't say the Misa Sa'av, which would mean that there would be 5 possibilities, 4 per female. How do you like that? Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to try your old shtick of ton of a shear. Well, we're not here to list everyone. But then why would it have said the number? Why start by saying there's 4? Only 4, no more than 4. So maybe you'll say your other answer that you gave for the Mishnah. The Tana is only talking about things that are definable and the death of her father is not definable. Well, what about the puberty? And still it's listed. And I know what you're going to say. You're going to say what Rav Safra says, that there is a particular time for puberty as well. I have a killer of a question for you. It says over here, the death of the masters. Well, I don't know when the master's going to die. So don't try to tell me it doesn't say the death of a father because you don't know when the father's going to die. You didn't know when the master's going to die either. So therefore, obviously, it should have said the other case, according to you, Reish Lakish. Nah, you guys read it all wrong over here. You assumed that the 4 cases are including the death of the Adin in the Nirtza. That's what you thought? You got it all wrong. He never included the death of the Adin in the Nirtza. What? So how do you come out? I understand that. How do you come out with 4 then if we weren't including the death of the master? So what are the 4, please? I dare you. Tell me what the 4 are. Which 4? There are no 4. All you've got is 3. You've got Sheish, you've got Yovel, and you've got Simanim. Ah, I'll tell you. They are like this. Shanim, 6. Yovel, 50. And Yovel shall Ritzia, which is a different din of Yovel. Because the Yovel in the first case is just the Yovel, even if it's in the middle of Sheish. And Yovel of Ritzia is even if you went to Ritzia. You assumed before that there's only 1 category called Ritzia. There's 2. And that's how we get 4. And we don't include the Misa Sa'adon. And I know you're going to say that I'm pushing it. I'm not pushing it. Hachanami Mistava. This is the most reasonable way to read this statement of Rabbi Shimon. Because in the Seifa it says, when he speaks out, why you don't have 3 in more than 3 in either sex? Because you cannot find the case of 4 in any sex. Why? Because there's no simonim for a male, and there's no din of ritzia for a woman, but we would still have 4, because we know that if her adin dies, she goes free. So why doesn't the death of the Adin, without Reish Lakish, why doesn't the death of the Adin take the place of the Ritzia? So then we should have 4. And there is a Ritzia, it's the equivalent of Ritzia, because Imisa Beisha Mashkachas La'arba, with the death of the Adin. So Shmami, no, we are not talking about the death of an Adin, and you have completely misunderstood. We were talking about Yovel, and we listed Yovel as 2 different things, 1 by a Nirtza, and 1 by a regular Eved that would be Yotze. Masiv Rav Amra, ve'elu ma'anikin lahem, ha'yotze b'shanim, u'b'yovel, u'b'mitat ha'adon, ve'ama ivriya b'simanim. Uh-oh. So the Brayta says b'feresh, mitat ha'adon is a case of ritzia, of ha'anaka, and according to Reish Lakish, we have no excuse for leaving out the Misa Sa'av. If she would be Yotze, like Reish Lakish, with the Misa Sa'av, then why doesn't it say Misa Sa'av over here? And we're just going to go through this, even though we know where this is going, because it's going to say, if it lists the Misa Sa'adin, then why wouldn't it list the Misa Sa'av? But we're just going to go through it for the sake of the format. V'chi teima, you're going to say ton of a shir. No. It says Elu. What about Simonim? And you're going to tell me Simonim has the shear like Rav Safra because if you're 9 years old, less than 9 years old, it doesn't count. But why did it mention Mises Ha'adayin? And it doesn't mention Mises Ha'av? Ti Yufta, the Resh Lakish, Ti Yufta. This teaches that Resh Lakish is actually wrong. The Mises Ha'av does not free the Oma Ivriya. We were examining Resh Lakish's halacha, which is tremendous chiddush, that Resh Lakish made a kal v'chomer, that a Oma Ivriya is yotza from the Adon in the event that her father dies back at home. Nothing to do with the Adon. So we went through many, many issues with Resh Lakish. We finally came out that Resh Lakish is wrong. Fine. It's a tiyufta. The question is that Resh Lakish obviously can't just be wrong. I mean, he said, or kal v'chomer, we need to deal with that kal v'chomer, don't we? I mean, Resh Lakish made it very clear why he's saying what he's saying, and we can't just ignore it. But if he said that if Simonim means Motzi, so then basically Kol Shekein, the Mises Ha'av, will be Motzi, because Simonim is Motzi Afilu from the father. Therefore, asked the Gemara, Reish Lakish, kal v'chomer Omar, everybody's got the place over there, that if the father dies, that has more koyach to be Motzi Mirushas Ha'av than even Simonim. And therefore, if Simonim remains me a Adain, so then Kol Shekein Mises Ha'av should be Motzi me a Adain. Answers the Gemara, the point is that we now understand, because of our pircha, the tiyufta, that actually the kal v'chomer was no good in the first place. It was making a basic assumption that was wrong. Kal v'chomer prichai. Why? Because there's an obvious difference between simonim and between Mises Ha'av. The simonim are an ishtana haguf. Over there, there's a change in her physically. So that physical change affects both the relationship to the father and the relationship to the Odin. That makes sense. But there's no change in her with the death of the father. So therefore, you cannot prove that that should be Motzi from the Odin because it has nothing to do with the Odin. And therefore, it seems to be a misapplication of the kal v'chomer completely. And because of that, we accept the tiyufta of Resh Lakish. Now, the problem is that Resh Lakish really makes a lot of sense in the context of a number of issues. Take a look at this. We've got a real contradiction here between two brises, and the best way out of that, the resolution of the contradiction, would be to say that Resh Lakish is right, because we've got one brisa that says like this. An Eved Ivri that you give the Ha'anaka to, that's called the Enek, the enek, or the tip that's given to the Eved Ivri, he keeps himself. The enek that's given to an Oma Ivriya, that also goes to herself. Okay, then we got another brisa that says not like that. The other brisa says, the enek of an Oma Ivriya, or anything that she would find, all goes to her father. Whoa. The most that the Odin can say is, now wait a minute, it took her a half an hour to retrieve that Aveda. That's off of my time, man. She was supposed to be working for me, and why the heck don't I get the Mitzia? So we say to him, why should you get the Mitzia? What you do get is a refund of the half hour of lost time. So whatever goes to the father, let's say she found, you know, $1,000 purse, so we'll pay you $3 for the amount of time that she worked. That was on your time. That's fine. That's what you get. Now, how do you explain the contradiction? Does it go to her father or does it go to her? Huh? Now, the simple explanation is Resh Lakish is right. And in the case where the father dies, she's Yotzei from the Rishus of the Odin. And the difference between the two cases is a very simple difference. Namely, one case, in the first brisa, where it says she gets to keep it herself, that's referring to the case where she had left the Rishus of the Odin with the death of the father. So because of that, she obviously will keep her own enek. Mashenken, the other brisa, which says she has to give it to the father, That's talking about the case where she was Yotza with something else. Let's say Besimani. So over there, her father is alive, and therefore the father keeps it. So everything works out perfectly. You do not have a problem, except you made a problem because you said Reish Lakish is wrong. But if Reish Lakish is right, wow, we've got a ready-made solution. Part of welcoming the Alons home just in time to catch the rest of the Daf Yomi. Amazing. Perfect timing. You just forgot to stop off in Walnut Creek and pick up another passenger. Anyway, says the Gemara, look, I mean, come on. You don't need to say Reish Lakish is right to get the answer, do you? I mean, all you're saying is that one case is talking about where there is a father alive, and one case is talking about where there is no father alive. What does that have to do with whether she got out of the avdus with the death of the father? It's irrelevant. Both cases are talking about where she left because of simanim. And in one case, the father died the next day before the other was manik, or he gives her the enik, it goes to her, because she has no father. That's all. What's the big deal? So actually, we don't need Reish Lakish. And there's a problem between the two brises. One brisa, the last brisa, is talking about where the father is alive, and the other one died, where it was talking about that when she was Yotze B'Simanim, the father was not alive, and therefore she keeps it herself. Makes no difference whether you hold of Reish Lakish or you don't hold of Reish Lakish. It works out either way. Now, I just want to take a look at those two brises because there was something there that really didn't add up to me. I understand why you say that the enik, the tip that goes to an Amma Yivriya, goes to herself, meaning not to whom? Not to any of her brothers. Why would you think it goes to her brothers? Because you would have thought that the same way the father has rishus over his daughter, who's a katana, so if the father dies, he leaves the rights over to his heirs. That's what you might have thought. And therefore, we need to clarify to you that that is not true. Lemu'utei achim, the rest of the family does not inherit anything of the rights of the father to their sister. D'tanya. V'itnachaltem otam livnechem acharechem. This is the din of someone who's kene an eved knani. They are given over as Yerusha to your children. But it stresses, otam livnechem. You can leave over your eved knani to your children. V'lo benotechem livnechem. You do not leave over rights to your daughters, to your children. Mikan, this teaches clearly, she'in adam orish zechut bito livno. Child does not inherit rights to his sister. Okay, so the Braita is essentially teaching that. Enek ama ivriya goes to herself and not to her brothers in the event that her father died. But why in the world do I need to write in a Braita that the enek of an eved ivri goes to himself? Of course he goes to himself. Nobody ever owns the rights except himself. It doesn't matter what age he is. I mean, there's no halacha that someone else gets the right to another person. So then, pshita, el alaman, who do you want to give it to? Omer of Yosef, man, oh man, what I see here is a yud keret kachazin halacha. This is something like the English tempest in a teapot, except that it's not a tempest. It means it's been blown out of all proportion. So basically what happened, the Tana finds a yud, and he blows up this tiny little yud till it's the size of a city. I mean, this was absolutely ridiculous, a waste of time, telling us that the enek eved ivri is liatzmo, just to keep things clear, you know, not clear, just to keep things parallel. So he mentions the enik of an eved ivri, the enik of an am ivriya, and then he's driving us crazy. What could the chiddush be? There never was a chiddush. It's a little meaningless thing, and now you're blowing it all up into the size of a city. Abaya says, no, it's coming to you a big chiddush. We talked about this before. What happens if this eved owes money to somebody else? Remember, she shibudah d'Reb Nosson. So shibudah d'Reb Nosson would mean that if A owes B and B owes C, then A pays C. So you might think that you, as the Odin, when you're freeing this Eved Ivri who is B, has to give the Enek to C, to whom the money is owed by the Eved Ivri. Kamash Malan, no. When it comes to tips, there is no din of Shibud de Reb Nosson. That's the Chiddush. And that was said by Tutoi. D'Tanya, Tutoi Omer, lo. It says over here to be manik lo. That means him. And not to Baal Chovo. That was Gufa, the Anik Tanik lo. Make sure he gets the tip and don't provide the tip to someone that he owes money to unless he agrees. Okay, anyway, getting back to the whole Braita that started this discussion, we're still talking about, remember, Rabbi Shimon talked about we've got four people that we can be manik and three per sex and so on, right? Now, the Braita began with a general halacha. So the main din of Hanukkah is written in Re'eh together with the din of Yotze B'Sheish. That when he's Yotze B'Sheish, so then Ha'anek Taniklo, Mishnah Schar Sochir, right? The whole business. He's worked for you double the amount of time. So the Braita says, and we're going to have to learn out, how do we know that it applies across the board, that the following people get Hanukkah. If he was Yotze B'Shanim, which is B'Sheish, if it was Yotze B'Yovel, if it was Yotze B'Misas HaOdein, and an Oma Ivriya that's Yotze B'Simanim, but a Eved Ivri who runs away, or who bought his rights to himself back, he is considered to be leaving without leave, and even though he paid you, you don't know him anything, the guy wants to leave. Let him leave, but she should not expect a tip from me. So if he runs away, I don't need to give him any kind of tips. Rabbi Meir Eimer, it's true that if he runs away, we don't give him a tip. But if he's Yotze Bigiraon Kesef, if he bought his rights back, then you do give him a tip. And here is where we cut in to the part of the Brisa that we quoted earlier. Rabbi Shimon Omer, there are a total of four different sets. And remember, we had a question before, this is what exactly the four are. Three out of the four are for males. Three out of the four are for females. But there's no four for any one sex. Why? Because there's no din of yitzia for a male. And there is no din of ritzia for a woman. And ritzia is where the death of the Odin frees you. And therefore, this was one of the questions that we asked Reish Lakish, remember? That according to him, the death of the Adon would free her, and that is, we had to say that according to him, the two Yovels are separated. Okay, that's just to remind you. Anyway, but how do we know all of this? How do we know that there is a din of Hanukkah, not only in a Yotze B'Sheish, but there's a din of Hanukkah for the other cases listed, namely a Yotze from Ritzia with Mises Adon, and the Yotze B'Simonim, and the Yotze B'Yovel? How do we know that? So let's go through each one. Tana Rabba, Yochel lo yeh manikim ela liyotze b'sheish. The only case that's given in the pasuk clearly is the Mishnah Schar Sochir Avad Chashesh Shanim, if the Eved was Yotze with the number of years. But if he was Yotze b'Yovel, or he was Yotze b'Mitata Adon, or if an Oma Ivriya was Yotze b'Simonim, how do we know that they too are supposed to be Yotze with your tip, with your Hanukkah? Talmud Lomar, Tishalchenu, verse says Tishalchenu, V'chi Tishalchenu Chofshi Mimach, Lo Tishalchenu Reikam. So, okay, so then that means we're repeating the Tishalchenu. That means that there's another Shiluach, not only B'Shana HaShevi'id Tishalchenu Chofshi Mimach, which is the first Tishalchenu. Then it says, V'chi Tishalchenu. What's that talking about? Oh, that's got to be talking about Yovel. And then it says, Lo Tishalchenu Reikam. So then that would mean that we've got all of these Yitziot covered. Now, you might think that that covers also somebody who ran away, or someone who bought himself out. Talmud Loma V'chi Tishalchenu Chofshi Me'imach. Means it's coming from you. Only Misha Shiluchacha Me'imach. If the Yetziah was because it went from you. Not that he bought himself out. So that is, you don't want to free him. And not that he ran away. So Misha Shiluko Mi'imach. But that excludes someone who ran away, a Boreach, and someone who bought himself out, Bigiron Kesev. We're over there. Ain't Shiluko Mi'imach. You're not sending him out, and therefore, you don't owe him any tips. Now, Rabbi Meir says, hold on a minute. If he ran away, I agree with you. That's called Ein Shiluko Mi'imach. But if he was Yotze Bigiron Kesef, that is Mi'imach. Because remember that we have that pasuk Vehevda, which means that the Odin is part of the process. And in allowing the guy to buy himself out, Bigiron Kesef, it is considered to be Me'imach. He may not like the idea. So what? He may not like the idea of Yotze B'Sheish. So what? He may not like the idea of Yotze B'Yovel. So what? But the point is, Tainas Rebbe Meir, that Giron Kesef is no different than the other Yotze that the guy would have preferred that he would still work. But wait a minute now. You said that there's no machlokas. Everybody, Tadakam, Rebbe Meir, everybody agrees. If the guy runs away, he doesn't get a tip. Well, I don't understand what that means. What do you mean if he runs away, he doesn't get a tip? If he runs away, when we identify that guy, the cops bring him back and they make him work out the rest of his term, right? You can't run away. This is a monetary chov. So how are you going to run away? So in the end, that's called hashlama. You're going to have to make up all the time that you lost by running away. So at the end of that time, why shouldn't he get a tip? He's like everybody else. He put in his time, and now he should get a tip. D'tanya, minayin l'boreach shechayav la'ashlim. How do we know that if someone ran away, and when he's found, he has to make up that time? Talmud lomar, sheish shanim yavod. He's got to work a full 6 years. And therefore, there's no way out of that. Yochala filu chala. Now, you might think, what happens if he gets sick? Does he have to work while he's sick? Or does he have to make up time if he didn't work for some days while he was sick? No. Talmud lomar, ubashvi'it yetze. I mean, obviously, if you're telling me he has to work for 6 years, what's the point of telling me bashvi'it yetze? That's telling me that even if he were sick, he does not have to be mashlim. So how do you explain that according to Rabbi Meir, if the guy made up his lost time with Hashlama, why doesn't he get a tip? Omer of Sheshes, I'll tell you why. Where did the Tanakhama and Rabbi Meir agree that there's no din of Enek for someone who was a runaway who was Mashlim? That's where he wasn't Mashlim. What do you mean? How could he not be Mashlim? Very simple. He ran away, and then before he was Mashlim, Pagabo Yovel. Now Yovel comes. Now the guy shows up and says, well, hello. What do you mean, well, hello, you bum, you ran away? Yeah, well, but nothing I can do about that because it's already post-Yovel, and post-Yovel, I'm free. So if it was Boreach v'Pagabo Yovel, you might have thought, okay, bottom line is, what freed this guy? Yovel. So you might have thought, okay, forget about the fact that he ran away. Bottom line is, Yovel freedom. We had a pasuk from Teshalchenu that even Yovel, it means you have to give him a tip. And therefore it would be called Shiluko Mi'imach Karina Bey. And we shouldn't give him a knas that he loses his tip. Therefore, they're coming along. The Tanakama and Rebbe Meir both agree that no, obviously in that case, he does not get a tip.